The book we're working on this year is How to Change Your Life by Ernest Holmes. And this is a relatively recent copy with an foreword by Reverend Dr. Michael Beckwith. And it's a powerful book. Gail shared with us that it's even available in the library in the military hospital where she work sometimes, and it's an effective an encouragement to people who are looking to find new ways to revision their lives. And I'm thrilled that that was the book that Judy was inspired to bring to us to schedule for 2026. This brand new year, and changing our lives for the better sounds like a really nice plan for 2026. So, we're going to kick off the year with Kaylee doing the first chapter, and I will let her introduce it. It's a joy to have you here with us, Kaylee, and I really appreciate your perspective and your youthful take and experience that enlightens us so much all the time. So here's Kaylee.
Hello, everybody. Thank you so much, Connie. Happy to be here. Happy New Year, everybody. It is 2026, and I realized that 20 years ago, I watched The Secret for the first time, and my life changed, and it's led me on this journey now for 20 years since I was 13, 14. So it's been awesome. I agree with Connie. I think this is a great book. I think it's especially a great first chapter because it just summarizes the law. And I was like I said, I think in my intention, like it's a great way to start the new year. Like, hello, this is just a refresher. Let's do this. So I'm going to be honest, this is not going to be a super, super long talk because like I liked the book last year, but like it's very much Holmes. It was very much like Holmes being very philosophical and talking and branching off of various ideas. So there were like it was a lot of topics he covered, but this book is very well edited and compiled. And so it's definitely going to be more of a sort of a review kind of chapter, nothing too huge and crazy. Like I said, it's really just a summary of the law, right? So let's just start at square one. And he has a very nice hook, right? It's like your dreams can come true. And I think everyone has heard that from Disney at a young age. When you wish upon a star to sales copy and like your dreams can come true. Take a trip to Cancun. You know, like we see it everywhere. Your dream can come true. It is a very appealing statement. And I think that a lot of people live in sort of a, I don't want to say like hypnotized state, but I think people go through the motions in their daily life. They get in the car and they have breakfast, or they have breakfast and they get the kids ready for school and they go to work and they pay their bills. And I think a lot of us long for something more within ourselves and within our souls, right? So the statement, your dreams can come true. We love that. We love that concept. And, you know, some people that's, well, I want to win the lottery. But then if you think and you break that down, what you really want is freedom. And what you really want is the time to enjoy your family or pursue your hobbies or travel and enjoy the beautiful earth we have. So people have different dreams. It's not just, I think someone said today, it's not just luxury, it's not just money. It goes deeper than that. And so Holmes says, you know, we all have these dreams and we all want them to come true. And how do we do this? And I think a lot of the time people feel maybe a little bit out of control. They feel like, this isn't quite my world, if you will. Like there's someone out there who's, whether it's a god in the sky with a long white beard, whether it's your priest or your pastor or your boss or the banker, there's someone in your life that holds some sort of power over you, some sort of power over conditions. And this is Holmes saying, no, you actually have a lot more control and power than you think you do. And he says, the simple point of it is, what is his exact quote? Okay. My thought is in control of my experience, and I can direct my thoughts. Okay. So he says, the first step into this is you have to make this make sense. Because, like I said, people very much live in this world of get up in the morning, pay your bills, go to work. I have to pay the banker. I have to do what my priest says. I have to go to confess. And that's okay. If you believe that, awesome. It's all about you exploring your faith, your spirituality. You could listen to this talk and say, that's not for me. That's great. Take what's good for you and move on, But I do think that it's important to get different points of view, and different thoughts and realize that, it's not just one or two things controlling your life. It's not just a budget. It's not just having to please your family or please your mom or whatever. You have a lot more power and control. And one of these gifts is, like I said, we control it. And like Holmes said, we control it through our mind. And we have to process that through a lens that works for us. And he says, whether you come from a religious background, for example, a lot of the New Thought divine science practitioners were Christian based. And so Jesus often says, you have the faith of the mustard seed to move mountains. And, the story of Christ is that he defied death. He performed miracles. He performed water into wine all through the power of his mind, all through the power of what is labeled God or the Holy Spirit through him. So there's a powerful point of view from a religious perspective. And then Holmes also says, well, then you also have it through a very rational, empirical perspective as well. This concept that God, Holy Spirit, as some people might label it, is everywhere. You have it with, and I think I've used like the snow and the snow cloud example before, but Holmes talks about the water cycle and rain comes down, rain nourishes the grass, it grows, photosynthesis happens, absorption happens, it creates more rain, it goes into the oceans, sometimes it creates beautiful snowflakes. There's this concept of an essence, and a God concept, Holy Spirit, whatever you want to label it, even throughout nature, that you watch a beautiful, I got the alert on my phone that it's now probably about the time to start planting peonies, which are my favorite flower. And if you tend it and you take care of it, you can watch a plant grow, a peony grow. And one of the most beautiful things is to watch a peony open, watch it go from a bud to all those beautiful flower petals. And like that's done without forcing it. So there's some sort of beautiful energy there in nature as well, in the power of being able to. I remember my chemistry teacher in high school mixing chemicals and making things pop and explode or crackle. And like, there's all this beauty and fun in nature too, that's effortless. So there's definitely an essence of power in both the empirical and the religious. And I think that's really neat that you can look at it from both ways. And then Holmes talks about, branching off of this. There's this concept, and that's very important to grasp, is that there is an element of omnipresence, where God is everywhere. What is labeled God? It could be Holy Spirit. It could be the life force. It could be that. It could be physics. It could be nature. Whatever you want to call it. It could be the power of chemistry, quantum energy, if you're a physicist. I don't know. Whatever you want to label it, there's something there. And again, even if you're an atheist and an empiricist, there's something there that makes your body go into the earth and then become food when you pass away for the new beautiful things, whether it's the myofungal, the kingdom, whether it's little creatures and animals, everything's a cycle, everything is beautiful energy. So there is something there that permeates our actions, our lives. And I wanted to do a really an interesting example of this is that a little historical anecdote of this concept of mind being in everything and connecting everything. I'm a big I'm a history nerd, and one of my interests is Imperial Russia. Long story, but long story short, I'm sure some of you probably remember hearing about the Romanov family and the fact that the prince unfortunately had hemophilia. And hemophilia is a disease that's genetically passed. It causes you can't the blood doesn't clot correctly, right? So what you and I would have, like, oh, I bumped my elbow, it bruises, it heals in a couple days. Unfortunately, the prince would be in agony for days. And one of the things his mother, the Empress of Russia, found comfort in, very controversial figure named Rasputin, who was a monk. And experts, medical experts, historical experts, argue whether he used hypnosis, whether his timing was really good. But the point is, At one time, the prince was essentially what all the doctors thought was on death at death's door, and his mother telegrammed Rasputin, and Rasputin wrote back simply, literally simply, "The little one will not die. Don't let the doctors bother him." And the mom was suddenly completely sure her kid would live, and in 24 hours, the fever was down. His swelling was down, he lived, right? So this is a incredible example of one, Rasputin wasn't physically there. So people who are like, oh, he used hypnotism or laying of hands or like he secretly gave him drugs, that wasn't applicable, right? Because Rasputin wasn't physically there. It literally was just the power of words and that mother's belief that her son was going to get better. And this is not a space for debate of the kind of character that Rasputin had, the concept of Orthodox Russian religion versus other religions, idolatry, as some might say, et cetera, et cetera. This is not the space for that. We could absolutely have a debate for that if we ever wanted to. The point is, this points to one, the power of mind being everywhere. That's simply a telegram and Rasputin's belief. And I think his daughter actually did an interview and said, I remember my dad would get the telegrams from the Empress and he would sit down and start praying. So again, Dr. Joseph Murphy, who lived later, but was a divine science practitioner, PhD in divinity. He called it, what does Murphy call it? I think he calls it like the ocean of mind. The ocean of consciousness that everyone can connect to. So again, you could argue Rasputin connected to it. He connected to mind, he connected to God. Whatever it was, it transmitted to the Empress, who then fully and completely calmed down and believed her son would be okay. And oftentimes, Murphy, even Holmes, not so much Neville Goddard, but those two, Dr. Joseph Murphy and Holmes, Ernest Holmes, do talk about how much of an influence a parent's thoughts and beliefs have on the child, because a child's consciousness is so open. I believe some of the Hindu belief says that, you know, a child's chakras, energy centers, are fully open and impressionable to age six. Like, so we are very, very affected by our parents. So the Empress immediately believed her kid was okay, calm down, stop crying, 24 hours, the prince starts to feel better. That's just an example to me of the power of how we can connect into a mind. And if you want to think of it more empirically, you could think of it as back in the olden days, they had the operator switchboards. You could plug into, you know, give me so-and-so's number and plug it in. You could think of it if you want to think of it as like a big, a huge computer server where all the things plug into, a big electrical conduit. You could plug into it and you can make changes. That's what the point of that story is. And Holmes says that's kind of the first step, is realizing there's something all around you that you can access to and you can connect with, right? So Holmes then says the next step is to practice this. And he said, this can be really hard. And it is really hard. He says something like, and I'm going to be completely honest with you, I've had people mock me as well. Is someone going to say to you, look at a blackbird and say it's white? Or I had someone say, okay, Kaylee, so if I imagine a Mustang in my parking spot, when I get home, it's going to be there. That's not, there's a lot more to it than that. It is absolutely, yes, belief, affirming, envisioning, very important. But this is the 3D, okay? And we're working with concepts of physics, right? So the law is the law. If you walk off a cliff, no matter how good of a person you are, you're going to fall and gravity's going to kill you. You're going to die. That's it. That's how it works, okay? You're not going to envision a Mustang and it's not going to magically manifest in your parking spot 10 minutes later. It's not how it works, okay? The point of this is to rewire your self-concept of your worth in this life and your power in this life, your capability to plug into God, energy, higher self, whatever you want to call it, the nature that makes the power that makes the earth turn, the power that makes made sure or whatever that the earth was the perfect percentage close to the sun so that we kept warm but didn't burn, whatever you want to call it, you have the ability to plug into it. You have power over a lot more in your life than you think you do. That is what the point of this is. And it does take practice. It takes practice when you are sitting there and a bill is due and you have to pay it and you have a family. And that is hard. And you're going to sit there and you're going to think, it'll come to me. It'll come to me. You know, you might not want to sit there and think, I'm a millionaire. Because, you know, Neville says, if you kind of say something like that, you're not going to believe it. And it's sort of going to be ridiculous. And you're going to just be like, that's ridiculous. So maybe start with something easier. Murphy has some beautiful affirmations of like, you know, God's love is like rain all around me. It constantly is within me and around me. So you can take bite-sized pieces of trying to try these new affirmations and try out, you know, what Holmes calls the law. You can try it out. Slowly ease into it. I mean, I know some people who straight up are like, I'm a millionaire. And like, they got tons of money. Great. Good for them. But a lot of us, there's a line going back to the movie of The Secret. There's a line that one of the people who's interviewed in that, I don't remember her name, unfortunately. She says it's going to be like a tennis match for a while because everything you've been impressioned with is going to fight against these new thoughts and this new self concept and this new point of view. And it's going to be like that for a really long time because you have had, for me, 33 years, for other people, 60 something, for some people, 8 years, 10 years of essentially indoctrination. That we are not as capable and connected to a higher power as we are. And so that's going to take a while to override, if you will. But I've said it before and I'll say it again. Dr. Joseph Murphy uses the beautiful example of osmosis along with a doctor of divinity. He was also a chemist. He was a licensed pharmacist for the U.S. Army. And he says, you know, it's osmosis. Like, eventually, it will seep into your mind. You'll get there eventually. Neville has a quote that I just love. And I think I even have it screenshotted here in my phone. Hang on. And it's so simple. And just, like, I feel like Neville is, like, very not flowery. Like, he just gets to the point. And so Neville said, your assumption, though false, if persisted in, will harden into fact. If you keep into that tennis match, if you keep dealing with it, if you keep pushing through, you keep praying, but if you do so, not begging, Not begging. Because begging comes from a place of lack, a place of fear. But come at it as a place of I'm plugging into something higher that I know will respond to me, as is nature. And think of it as accessing a new form of control you can have. And think of it as putting energy into a socket or recharging a battery. Every single day, you're putting more and more into this. You're filling it up with strength. Think of it from that point of view. If you persist in it, if you keep it that tennis match, if you keep it that spiritual osmosis, it will sink in. And Holmes has an interesting, what am I? He has like a graph in this chapter. And it's fabulous. It's like mind, subconscious mind, physical matter. I think Murphy has a better example of it. He says you're on a boat, and the navigator will say, "Okay, we have to go whatever, however many degrees east." Okay, that's your brain. That's your conscious mind. Ooh, I need money to pay this bill. I'm going to start focusing on, money coming to me in all sorts of different ways and God's abundance. That's a direction. Your subconscious mind is the engine room, the computer. It just takes whatever it's given and does it. The ship turning, however many degrees east, is the physical result. So you have to just remember your conscious concept that you persist in, that you keep at, will impress on the subconscious mind. And once then, there's the whole concept of letting go, which is the knowing that I input this command into the navigation system, the ship's going to turn. It'll turn. That could be scary too, but he doesn't really discuss that in this chapter, so we won't really like get into that fully. But that's sort of the model that is given, is that you give a command, your navigation system, your engine system, persist, gives the command, takes the command, does it, it happens. I'm trying to think if there was any other example. It might come to me later, but I was reading this chapter and I was like, this is a nice little summary. This is a good summary. It's realizing that we all do really long for something. We want our dreams to come true, whatever that dream might be. It's important to realize and start to recognize that our self-concept and ability is higher, and our connection with God, with energy, with nature is greater than our physical world. And our current world, especially as inundated with the AI bubble as it is right now, we're a lot more connected to something higher that's not a machine, than we think we are, that we're taught, and that we can really harness that gift and use that gift. And it's a matter of persisting in a tennis match with your new frame of thought, with your new desire, with your, whether that's robotic affirmations or state akin to sleep, like Neville Goddard talks about, SATs, where you tell yourself something before you fall asleep. Whether it's EFT tapping and saying, I feel healthier, I feel better, blah, blah, whatever works for you to start to impress your subconscious mind and use that power, you start to do it. You practice it. You give it energy every day as much as you can. And you will see results. That is simply how the mind works. That is how, if you want to call it, get really like the movie The Matrix, how this hologram works. And it's a strange thought. Again, because we're inundated in a world where that's not what we're taught. But it's a very powerful thought, and it's a good thought, and it's one to start off the new year with and to practice. And like I said, give energy to an affirmation every day. Even if it's 5 minutes, before you get out of bed and 5 minutes before you go to bed at night. Look at what we're taught as kids. Say your prayers at night, say your prayers in the morning. So maybe give it some time, affirmations, 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes at night. Try to feed it a little bit every day of this year. And I really and truly believe that you'll see some positive changes in your life. Take what you will, take what resonates with you, works with you, and work with it, mold it, make it. Michelangelo was famously quoted as saying, and I'm paraphrasing here, of course, I just looked at the marble and I knew there was a work of art within it. And I chipped away at it to uncover the art within. So practice every day. And I think and I believe that some form of art will come from it at the end of this year. Thanks.